You're listening to Richmond Famous,
a podcast about food, culture, and community in Richmond, Virginia. I'm Laura Sant.
I'm Nicole Lang.
Welcome to episode 24, where Mary Allison is
Richmond Famous.
So, a quick note, some housekeeping. As it were.
Housekeeping. You're on the
blog. I just wanted to make that joke again.
We are going to see you again in, or hear, you will hear from us again. We are taking a break for the rest of the month because Laura's getting married.
I am.
And we're going to see Lizzo.
Yeah, which we need a month off yes. to prepare for that.
So you won't be hearing from us. And I know the blog, publishing has been a little bit sporadic, but we do what we please. So hopefully you're okay with that. If not, please accept our sincerest apologies, but it's not going to change anytime soon.
You'll hear from us again in October.
Plus it'll be fall then. Yeah. I'll have energy to do things.
Yeah.
And we definitely have some fun folks coming up. We just have to nail them down, find them.
Yeah. And if you have anyone that you've really been wanting to hear from on the podcast, send us an email at richmondfamouspodcast@gmail.com because we love suggestions.
Yeah. Send us your suggestions, but we do have some good folks coming up. So it's back-to-back Scott's Edition
beverage people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this week we had Mary Allison, who is the distiller at Reservoir Distillery, which has been around since 2008.
Yes, it's located on kind of an unassuming corner.
Yeah, but they just painted a big, beautiful mural on the side. So now
they'll be noticed.
Assuming. Yeah. anyway, she's awesome. She is a trained actor and just always loved whiskey. and then got offered a job at Reservoir and now she's making that whiskey.
Yes.
And it's real good.
She is the distiller.
It is delicious. They do some cool stuff there, which you'll hear about, like single grain mash bills on all of their whiskeys, or I guess all of their basic line of whiskeys. Mm-hmm. And they age them in really tiny barrels. So I think she said they get like a 12-year whiskey in just a few years, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Because of the surface area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you haven't had the chance to go, you should go. I went and I was just like, I mean, I hardly drink brown liquors anymore, but I was just blown away. I loved the rye.
Yeah, you should go there and do a tasting.
Yeah.
Because it's really cool to try like 100% wheat whiskey next to 100% rye whiskey next to 100% corn. Anyway.
Here she is.
My name is Mary Allison, and I am the production manager and distiller at Reservoir Distillery.
There are two distillers here, is that correct?
Yes, there are two of us that mainly do most of the distillation now. It's really at the point, though, where there are sort of four of us that are the core team, I guess, and any one of us could step back there and do the distilling. But I do most of it. And then Nick can also, like, if I'm out for a day or if I need to step out for an errand or something, he usually takes over. And then Dave and Jay, who are the founders of the distillery, could both get back there. And then we have one other guy who's a production assistant who hopefully one day we'll be able to do the same.
So it's a small team.
Very small, yes. And then we have a couple of like part-time people who do tasting room stuff or sort of peripheral PR and advertising things as well.
Do you want to just give us the like broad strokes story of how you got into whiskey and how you came to be in Richmond?
I'll try to be as brief with it as possible, but it's a pretty meandering story.
Yeah,
so
you can meander. Yeah.
So originally I'm from Ohio. I grew up there all the way through college, and for college I studied theater, so I'm a trained actor, and so then after I graduated from college I did the acting thing for a few years, which is what originally brought me to Virginia. So I was professionally acting. Then I got involved in music, so I stayed in Virginia because I was in some bands and doing that. And then I moved to Richmond to get some more work opportunities and was still doing all the artistic stuff, working in restaurants and doing kind of those, you know, those jobs that let you just kind of be like, gonna be gone for 2 weeks, see ya.
Yeah.
So I was doing that, and I was working actually at a small cafe just around the corner called Moore Street Cafe, and Dave and more frequently Jay would come over and they would eat breakfast or lunch, and I kind of, you know, developed a relationship with them. We would joke around. I'd be like, oh, bring me a bottle of whiskey, you know, and they're like, well, that's illegal. but so they would, you know, Dave would always be like, oh, well, come by and we'll like give you a tour. You can do a tasting. So eventually I took them up, came over, did a little tour, did a tasting, and it was right at a time where they were looking to do some expanding and do some hiring. So about a week later, they emailed me and said, do you want a job? And I had to think very hard about that. I don't know. Don't want a job. And so I started part-time, did that for about 8 months, and then I came over full-time and trained on production, and the rest is history.
Wow.
And when was that?
It's been 3 years now that I've been here full-time, so about 4 years that I've been with the company.
So were you like obviously you were asking them about the whiskey before they offered you a job, but were you already super into whiskey, or did that kind of come from working here?
A little bit of both. It's always been sort of my poison of choice. I think that it's the most interesting in the spirits world. Whiskey, and then I think gin would probably be my second, just because there are so many things that you can do with them and so many ways that you can manipulate them, even though they're all sort of these core things, with the different grain types in whiskey and the different botanicals you use in gin, you can play around with them a lot. So it was always my favorite of the spirits, but I certainly was not an expert before I came here.
There are a few things you guys do here that are kind of unique mm-hmm. to Reservoir. Do you mm-hmm. want to talk about that a little bit?
Insofar as our product, you mean?
Yeah.
So one of the, I guess, the most interesting thing about our core product line is that they're all single grain. So we have our original offering was a wheat whiskey, a bourbon, and a rye. And the wheat whiskey is 100% wheat, the bourbon is 100% bourbon, and the rye is 100% rye, which you don't see a lot of, especially all three of those. A distillery doing all three of those, you might see, you know, one of those, they might have 100% corn or 100% rye, but the three single grain mash bills is really kind of different and interesting. We also do everything as local as possible, so all of our grain comes right from Virginia. We've never sourced anything. So a lot of times when people are starting out, or sometimes even as they're, you know, going down the road, it's cheaper to just buy either distillate or even aged product and just put it into a bottle and, you know, rebrand it, say, you know, this is whatever distillery, and, you know, sell it as your own. It's not illegal. It's just a little, little shady. But we have never done that. We've always made everything right here as locally as possible. And the easiest way to tell if you pick up a bottle at, you know, the liquor store, or you're looking at a bar, the easiest way to tell is if somebody has made it, they can say distilled, aged, and bottled by Reservoir or whomever. If it doesn't say that, then it probably wasn't made there. And they can use some words that make it a little tricky. You know, it might say like produced by, or like made by, or like distributed by, you know, and so it's these words that sound like they made it. But if it doesn't say distilled, aged, and bottled, then they probably didn't.
We've been doing lots of beverage guests. We had Courtney from Blue Bee Cider on, mm-hmm. and then before that, Noelle from Lamplighter talking about coffee. So for somebody who, say, has never had whiskey before, has no idea how it's made, can you just, like, walk us through that process, like the simple, like, as, you know, as simply as you can.
Mm-hmm. So really with whiskey, you're starting out almost in a similar way to making beer. You're going to start with grain, which you're going to make into what's called a mash. Essentially, it's kind of like a grain soup, where you add your grain, which you're going to grind or crack up a little bit, to hot water, so you could start to break down the sugars and the starches that are in that grain. Then you're going to add some yeast to that, which then the yeast is going to take those sugars that you've converted and it's going to turn them into alcohol. Now, at this point, you know, that would kind of be where you're at your beer stage. You know, you might add hops or you might add something else to it there, but if you're doing whiskey, then you're going to take that, what is essentially beer, and you're going to put it into a still. And the way that stills work at their most basic is that all liquids have different boiling points. So your water is going to boil at a different point from alcohol, and those are going to boil at different points from any oils or any other you know, solids or liquids that might be in there. So your alcohol is going to be one of the first things that boils. It's going to turn into steam. It's going to rise up and through the still and be taken out through the top of the still and then recondensed as it comes out the other side. So you're just kind of concentrating those alcohols. And we do that process twice, the distillation, which just further refines it. So we'll take something that's around, you know, maybe 10 to 15% alcohol and turn it into 150 proof or 75% alcohol. So we use pot stills, and that's, I mean, they're sort of the traditional, well, they're the first stills that were ever made because we didn't really have the technology for a column still. But so a pot still, it's just a different, it looks different. A pot still kind of has typically like a rounded head or some sort of kind of like bulbous head at the top. And then a column still has, just as it sounds, a column that goes up. The column still allows you to better define your, or better pull out your different alcohol at different proofs. So when we're running our pot stills, it's just going to come over, the distillate's going to come over at whatever proof it's going to come over at. And so you're going to start with your highest proof alcohol first, and then as the temperature rises, more water is going to start to evaporate through that distillation process, because we're just working with the boiling points. So more water is going to come over, and you're going to see the proof drop. So if you start at, you know, about 160 proof, and then it tapers down, we end at about 120 proof that we'll cut the still at. With a column, what you can do is you can pull out at very specific points where you want your alcohol to be at a different proof. So it's going to, you know, you have a setup, and you can have, they have them that are, you know, buildings, the stories high, and you can have little ones that are just, you know, a couple of feet high. But you can get a higher proof out of that. You do typically lose some flavor profile in that, but it just allows you to sort of cut at more specific points where you want to pull your alcohol out. A little less control, but more flavor.
Oh, I see. So it's like the artistic way to do it.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
I just forgot about mine. Oh, and then, so then what happens? You put it into very tiny barrels here. Do you want to talk about that?
They're 5-gallon barrels typically is what most of our stuff goes into. Although we now are getting some stuff into tens, and we do have product all the way up into the big 53-gallon barrels, which are what you see in all the commercials. But so we start out using the 5-gallon barrels, and the reason that we did that is that when you change the size of the barrel, you change the ratio of the surface area of the wood to the distillate that's inside of it. So you have a greater ratio of surface area versus the liquid that's inside. So you can get a higher age profile in a much shorter period of time.
Ah.
So it could be because your alcohol is coming in contact with that wood more frequently in a shorter period of time. So in 2 years, you know, we can do what might take 12, 15, or even more years in a 53-gallon barrel.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go back to the 100% mash bills mm-hmm. that you guys do. Why do you do that?
Well, initially it was because it was different. There were no products like that out there. As I said, now you kind of see some of them creeping in. But one of the really cool things that you can do with our product that you really can't do with anyone else's, well, there are a couple things. So first, you get to taste each grain as it is by itself. You know, if you're tasting any other kind of whiskey, a whiskey is a grain-based spirit, but you don't know what grains are in it. If it's bourbon, it has to be majority corn. If it's a rye whiskey, it has to be majority rye. But beyond that, it can be pretty much anything. So you get to taste individually what each grain tastes like as its whiskey expression. But then the second cool thing that you can do is that you can take the different single grains and you can become the distiller, kind of, and mm-hmm. create your own whiskey. So you can take, you know, if you say, like, I want to do 60% corn and 20% wheat and 20% rye. All you do is you get a bottle of each and you do a little blend, and then you can see what that would taste like. And we actually, so we have expanded beyond just our single grain stuff too. So now we have our Hunter and Scott line, which are, we have a bourbon in that line and a rye in that line. And they're a little bit younger age profile and slightly lower in proof. And we started out with them a little bit more geared towards capturing some of the cocktail industry. But kind of the way that we came to those was through, you know, experimentation and just messing around with some of the different flavor profiles that we liked. So the bourbon is 75% corn, 20% wheat, 5% rye. And then the rye is really cool. It's 2/3 rye and one third wheat, which is a mash bill that is not available anywhere else, Bender.
Yeah. Okay. And I talk about when the tasting room is open, because I feel like anybody who's listening to this that's interested in whiskey should really come taste through that, because it's really cool to try the like 100% wheat next to the, yeah. and it was like, it kind of blew my mind, because I'd never tasted like 100% rye, or maybe I had, but not definitely not 100% wheat or anything. And it's cool to see how different they are.
It is. And it's neat to taste them sort of back to back, because you really get to see the difference of them. Then even, you know, tasting stuff out, kind of out in the wild, you know, if you taste a bourbon here and a wheat there and a rye there, it's hard to kind of, you know, compare them if you're not in your face there.
Yeah.
So it is cool to taste them back to back. But to the tasting room, currently we're open 4 to 7 Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and then 3 to 6 on Saturdays.
I want to talk a little bit about these flavor profiles. Mm-hmm. So when you have someone come in, how do you talk about the flavors? Like, obviously everyone's like, oh, it's like smooth and it's caramel and, you know, but I guess I'm wondering, like, how it compares to other things, like for instance, wine or coffee.
Well, to start, I, you know, initially when people come in and they'll have that exact question, what am I looking for? What am I trying to taste? And I try to refrain from, you know, being too specific. You know, I'll say, well, I can tell you what I taste, but if I tell you what I taste, then that's what you're going to taste. Mm-hmm. Because it is, I see it all the time back there, you know, you'll get a group of people that comes in and one person says, oh, you know, I taste vanilla. And everybody's like, oh yeah, vanilla. Oh yeah. Or like somebody's, you know, says something completely weird, like
tobacco.
You do get tobacco sometimes. You know, so I refrain from trying to be too leading in saying what things taste like, so that people can develop their own idea about it. One of the interesting things about tasting whiskey, and I'm sure it's the same with wine or anything, is that everybody's palate is going to be different. And even each individual palate your palate can change day to day based on what you've eaten or what you've drunk. Mm-hmm. If you're tired, if you're a little bit sick, if you have allergies, you know, a ton of things can impact what you're tasting at any given moment. So, you know, even I will taste any of our products that I've had many times, and, you know, one day something different, completely different will pop out. And it could be that that batch is slightly different, but more likely it's that something is a little bit weird with my palate that day. I've eaten something spicy, or I haven't had enough water. So I always try to let everybody have their own experience first. And then, you know, I'll say, like, what I taste in it. As sort of, I guess, overarching, like, characteristics, our wheat tends to be very smooth, a little bit savory. People say buttery even sometimes. The corn can be sweet, and you get a lot of the corn kind of grain characteristic. And then the rye tends to be a lot spicier, kind of peppery.
Would you say that spirits like whiskey have terroir? Is that a concept that applies?
Yes, definitely. I think it can depend, though. You know, for us specifically, because we use local ingredients as much as possible, and we'll even use, when we can, we use local wood in our barrels. You know, that certainly does carry with it a different, you know, some different things that it brings out in our whiskeys that you wouldn't taste in others. It can get a little bit muddled sometimes, because not everyone's doing that. So, you know, I think if you have something that you do as locally as possible, and you do, or even if it's not locally, but you do as specifically as possible. So, you know, you're always getting your grain from this one farmer, and even if you're getting it from Nebraska or whatever, certainly those notes will carry through. It can depend.
Where do you guys get your grain from usually?
So we get our wheat and our corn from Renwood Farms in Charles City, and then our rye comes from New Kent.
Wow, so that's hyper local. Yeah. I'm not kidding around.
Yeah.
And where does the wood come from?
The wood, like I said, when we can get it local, we'll get the staves from Culpeper, Virginia. Otherwise, we're getting wood either from Arkansas or from Minnesota, where the two coopers that we work with are.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's cool. So this, it really is like a local, a taste of Richmond, a taste of Virginia.
Yeah, it truly
is. You buy a bottle of this. Mm-hmm. It's, I think that's really cool. So you guys are about to expand or have expanded to Manchester, right? Is that?
Kind of. We now have a space in Manchester. Currently, we're just using it as a rick house for storing barrels, and then we'll store some, you know, dry goods and things there. Eventually, we may end up, you know, shifting some production there or some of our, you know, bottling or those kinds of things. But for the moment, we do have a foothold there, but it's just for the storage at the moment.
So all the making of the stuff is happening.
Everything still happens here, yeah.
Right here where we're, where mm-hmm. we're sitting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Haunted by spirit. That's what Nicole said earlier.
So what is in the future for Reservoir?
Hopefully more expansion. Mm-hmm. We're always trying to, you know, capture the local market, of course, but sort of expand our horizons. It's a tricky business. We're in the middle of sort of the craft distilling explosion, I feel like.
Right.
You know, it's kind of popping up everywhere, and so it can be hard to get your foot in the door and get in front of the right people and you know, maintain those spaces. But we're always, you know, trying to continue pushing outwards. We are in, I think it's like 13 states maybe now, mostly East Coast. So we're like, you know, Maryland, Delaware, D.C., North and South Carolina, Florida, Georgia. And then we'll see the bottles kind of pop up in weird places. Like they've made it as far as like Oregon and Tennessee. And, you know, they'll kind of like, you'll see somebody being like, oh, found this at my store. And I'm like, that's cool. I didn't even know we were in California, you know, whatever. You know, always trying to just kind of push those boundaries. And we are international as well. So we ship to the UK pretty regularly. We're about to ship to Germany. And then I think we're trying to open up France as well.
Oh, wow.
I was going to ask, you maybe touched on a little bit, do you guys have like an overarching philosophy about that's making whiskey?
I guess, how do you mean?
Like the way you choose to distill it, you know, like the way you choose to market it, how you have it available, like mm-hmm. the philosophy behind it, behind making it. Like when those two fellows, can you say their names again?
Dave and Jay.
Dave and Jay, the man behind the door. those two fellows, when they were sitting around deciding what they were going to do with their lives, mm-hmm. You know, like what were they seeking out to make? Like what mm-hmm. what is it?
Well, so the story at least goes that they were tailgating at a Virginia Tech game and were drinking a fairly reputable and decent bottle of whiskey and kind of like, we could do this better. You know, I don't know how many bottles they'd had at that point, but you know, we've all had those conversations, but instead of just leaving it at the conversation, they actually went for it and did it. But I think as far as sort of like overarching philosophies, I mean, certainly, you know, keeping it as local as possible has obviously been one thing that we've been very specific about. We've also, as I mentioned earlier, like never sourced anything. You know, we've always been very careful to only sell what we make, to not, you know, bring anything else in. And then I think kind of at the heart of it, Dave has a saying that he always says is like, do you like it? Do you want another one? Is like, you know, that's, I guess, the end product of it is just that we want to make something that people want and continue to come back to.
That reminds me of a question I wanted to ask earlier, which is when you were talking about how your palate can change from day to day. Mm-hmm. How does that affect when you're like tasting things for quality control or sure. consistency?
So we always try to, when we're putting things out, to have at least the four kind of core group here taste through everything and, you know, on an overarching thing, just give it like a check yes, check no. And then, you know, we'll get more specific and write down some tasting notes or say, you know, this tastes a little different from that or the other. We certainly do come to those days where somebody's just kind of like, I don't know. And we're like, what did you eat? And they're like, oh, yeah, I just ate this like Szechuan chicken. You know, you're like, okay, yeah, that's probably what it was. You know, and there will be times where we will kind of disagree or, you know, we'll have to kind of come back to it a couple times. But, you know, really having four different people who already, you know, just intrinsically have different palates and coming at it from those different ways, for the most part, you know, we've kind of got it dialed in, and we each know where other people's palates typically are. So if they're saying something completely out of line, like, oh yeah, I get like marshmallows in this, we're like, what? You know, like, or something just completely bizarre. You know, we kind of know what needs to be investigated further and what can be kind of like taken with a grain of salt. Yeah. Or a glass of water.
Let's taste it.
Yeah.
Let's taste it. So I brought you the rye because that's my favorite. Okay, selfishly.
I think that was my favorite too. I can't remember.
And I wouldn't even know if I've had. God, that's so. Every bottle is a mystery. You don't know what you're getting when it's not a single grain. Like, that's. I wouldn't even.
Well, hopefully you're getting the same mix every time.
Well, no, I mean, I'm saying across the board, like, just as a, like, drinking whiskey. Like, oh. I would never know if I've ever had. I mean, unless it said it on mm-hmm. the bottle, you know?
Yeah. It can be interesting, you know, when you stop and think about it. Like, I had mentioned earlier, though, about liking whiskey for the many variations you can have, and that's one of the things that does give it that variety, is that you take even just a little bit more or less of a different grain type.
Oh my God, this is so good. this is so good.
Nicole just made the most hilarious face. It smells almost like floral to mm-hmm. me. Is that something people say?
I do get the floral note, especially with some of these more recent rye batches. I think because we're using the Virginia rye, it's a little less intense and a little less spicy than some of the sort of Midwest ryes that are out there, which is the grain that a lot of people use in a rye. But I get, you know, certainly floral. Do you want me to tell you what I taste?
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I know you don't want to lead us, but you can lead us for this occasion.
Floral. Sometimes I'll get like a very like tea note, sometimes tobacco. And then certainly I get a little bit of spice, sometimes a little bit of like a licorice, anise kind of a flavor. And then I always like to look for the barrel notes, which are going to be like more of your caramel, vanilla kind of flavor tones too.
I was just going to say like a very specific, God, what is it? Werther's Original. Do you know what that is? Mm-hmm. Like, but it was only on the edge of my, like, it was very spicy, and mm-hmm. then at the very tip of my tongue I was like, what is that, what is that flavor? I'm like, it's a hard candy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought of the Werther's.
Mm-hmm. I get the tea a lot, like that, what's that vanilla flavored black tea that you can get that's like Celestial Seasoning?
Oh.
Whatever that's called.
I know what you're talking uh-huh. about.
Yeah, I get that.
Holy crap, that is delicious.
Yeah,
I love this. Thank you for making it.
Of course.
Wow, that's cool. Well, thank you so much for taking the time at the end of your day to do this with us. It was awesome.
Thank you. And thanks for the whiskey. We're going to drink some more.
Oh, my God. It's so good. The rye. Get the rye. Thanks for listening.
Richmond Famous is hosted, produced, and edited by us,
Laura Sant
and Nicole Lang.
Our theme song is Funky Virginia by Sir Guy.
Please rate us and leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And follow us at richmondfamous.com and at RVAFamous on Twitter and Instagram.
Bye!